Hello and welcome to this episode of the Venus and Vesta Astrology Podcast. This episode is about the lunar eclipse happening on the 8th of November. And of course, this lunar eclipse follows the solar eclipse that happened on the 25th of October. So right now, as I record this, we're betwixt the eclipses, which is seen as a really powerful time to where sort of the more esoteric, the shadow forces arise and karma plays out in a really powerful way. And eclipses happen in pairs. And so we always have and sometimes there's a third afterwards, but generally in pairs, and there's always a solar and a lunar eclipse. And so we started this time with the solar eclipse first, which is the sun and the moon coming together in a new moon. And that was in Scorpio. And the pairs are always in oppositions to each other. So the next one is always going to be in the sign opposite. And in this case, it's Taurus. So we are going from this solar eclipse that was happening in Scorpio. And Scorpio, of course, is about what is hidden and our deep inner psyche. And it's about our subconscious. And not just the subconscious and the hidden and the shadow forces, but also, you know, the programming, the control and programming that runs our lives. And of course, the subconscious is what does run our lives. And, you know, with the Scorpio, he's fully aware of those ideas, those underworld currents that happen. And so when an eclipse in Scorpio comes up, we are duty bound to some of those things are going to come up for us to address. And it can be quite a powerfully, you know, an intense time to really look at our shadow stuff and really address what maybe we've been hiding. Now, this solar eclipse that just happened was on the south node, and the south node is always what was going on in the past. So I see this as addressing the scorpionic themes that were happening in the past. And of course, Venus is there anyway. So the scorpionic themes, of course, are sex and money. Sex, money, power, you know, and power shifts kind of thing. So and control. And so when we look at this solar eclipse, we're seeing that it's going to bring up ideas about where we were sexually controlled or where we were giving our power away in the past. And what programmings, what were what was I thinking? You know what I was thinking? I was thinking what everyone else was told to think, perhaps. And that's what's going to come up. And maybe we're not feeling so good, or we need to change those ideas now. So that's the more sexual and relationship ideas about Scorpio. But also there is the idea that Scorpio and Venus is about the money and, you know, the money programming, the subconscious programming in the past that may have run our lives. And so those things might come up. And I think it's really kind of powerful that those ideas might come up when we are sort of being tiptoed, forced forward into maybe accepting digital currency. And we're going to know we want more control over our money. We don't want to give our control completely away to a hidden idea or a notion, which would be so scorpionic. So that was those are the themes that are happening there. And it did make me laugh, really, that, you know, Rishi Sunak became the Prime Minister of the UK. And really, you know, he suddenly took control of the money markets. And suddenly, you know, he's an ex-banker and it's very scorpionic. You come in, right, we're going to take back control. Everything's going to go back. We're going to undo what was happening, what Liz Truss had done. And we are going to put in better rules and fix this. It's a very quick scorpionic eclipse thing to happen. And I think I might do a podcast around Rishi's chart, because it's quite interesting, especially when you think about the lunar eclipse that is happening. Now, the lunar, so when they come in pairs, so we've got the scorpionic themes of the hidden, and because the sign opposite, where the next solar lunar eclipse is happening, it's going to be opposite themes. And so from the unmanifest and the hidden, we become to Taurus, which is the manifest and the very tangible here it is, I'm touching it and actually feeling it in my body. You know, Taurus is about our bodies and the earth and the planet earth, but also, you know, where Scorpio might be about the wealth as well and money and how money moves from mortgage to pension to, you know, it's not money in your purse, it's hidden money. Whereas Taurus is about the money that you might have in your pocket and the money that you earn and the money that you get from the earth, you know, what the bounty, earth's rich bounty. So we are shifting from one to the other quite nicely within any eclipse pairing. So this lunar eclipse happening on the 8th of November is actually conjunct 60, it's 16 degrees Taurus and it's conjunct Uranus. Uranus, crazy ass Uranus, who really is there to put in some curveballs and wake us up. It's the enlightenment planet, the planet that makes us grow, evolve and understand where we are on a much higher level. And when I say a high level, a more sophisticated level, an understanding of where we are as of a group energy. So in this pairing, you know, when we have this lunar eclipse, it's going to be conjunct Uranus. In opposition, the Sun is still going to be with Venus, but Mercury joins Venus and the Sun in Scorpio. And Mercury, of course, is the lower octave of Uranus. So we have the south node there, the south node solar eclipse with the past and the ideas, the mental programming, because Mercury is there in the past, coming to Taurus, where we're actually feeling this in our bodies. But it's in the north node to where this is where we're heading, with this where we can have a much more tangible idea where we're heading. But it's Uranus is the higher octave of Mercury. So it's like we're really kind of lifting our minds to something higher, more progressive, and maybe a little bit crazy, maybe totally unexpected. You know, expect the unexpected. So this is I like this pairing of the idea from going from the hidden to the manifest. So of course this is going to be a lunar eclipse, which is a full moon. And when you think about that, we always think of a full moon is far more intense and powerful than say a new moon, just because the new moon is a two planets, the sun, well, they're not planets, but the sun and the moon coming together in a conjunction. And so they're combining their energies, where we have, a full moon, it's two planets or the sun and the moon in opposition. So we've got this opposing forces, the juxtaposition of not sure which way I'm going. And this is pulling me in the opposite direction, expanding my worldview and coming to bringing things to a head, bringing things up. You know, when the tide is on the full moon, the tide is big and it's coming up. And we've got to address the issues that come up on a full moon. However, when we think about the solar eclipse, we think it's more powerful or it's more visually arresting than the lunar eclipse, because when we see a solar eclipse, of course, we see that disc of the moon coming in front of the sun. And for this solar eclipse, I was with my class in London. We got out on the rooftop with solar eclipse glasses. It was so bright, you could not have looked at the sun and this eclipse without glasses or without through a camera or some sort. And I have looked at eclipses through quite a hazy clouds, not too thick clouds. And, you know, you could just see it happening. But it's really dangerous to look at the sun, just saying, health and safety, really dangerous to look at the sun without proper eclipse eclipse sunglasses or they're not ordinary sunglasses. You've got to have eclipse glasses. Anyway, we were all on the rooftop, and what we could see, because, you know, as I say, the solar eclipse is much more powerful looking, is that there's a big disc of the sun, and then slowly at about 11 o'clock there was this little dent in that came in at the sun, and then slowly it got bigger and bigger. It was at 11 o'clock and it moved to get bigger at 10 o'clock, and then it kind of filled the quarter space, not but it didn't get to the middle, so from 11:30 till sort of 9 o'clock, there was a curved chunk taken out of the sun. And to see that, I think, is a really powerful thing. So we look at the full moon and the new moon, the full moon seems more powerful, but for the solar eclipse and the lunar eclipse, it feels like the solar eclipse is much more arresting, powerful, and you know, really, I think the ancients would have seen it and felt that, you know, that this was really bringing some omen. The sun, you know, someone's eating the sun, or the dragon that, you know, was being eaten at this point, using their phrases or their idea of how they might have seen it. So it is fascinating to see a solar eclipse, but you have to be in the shadow of that eclipse. It has to be daytime, so it's a smaller amount of people get to see it. And of course, but you know, if it was a total solar eclipse, and it means that the sun is eclipsed by the moon, solar being eclipsed, that the moon is you could fit 400 moons into the size of the sun. So you'd think, well, how come the moon can hide the sun? But the sun is 400 times further away. So that when we see them as the same size. So perfect matching. Nothing happens by accident, of course. But the sun perfectly comes in front of the moon perfectly comes in front of the sun. And so to block out the sun completely on a total solar eclipse, but which this from the UK wasn't. I think it was only 90% where you could see it in Kurdistan or Afghanistan or somewhere. So it was only a subtle chunk that was being taken here. But also you would see that if the moon varies its distance to Earth by about 14%. So when it's closer to the Earth, it appears bigger, and therefore it blocks out much more of the sun. So you just see the atmosphere of the sun around, the corona. And when it's a bit further back, you see a little ring of the sun around the edge of the moon. And, you know, they've got these little beads of light that come out, and they're called Bailey's beads. And it's very pretty. I mean, I love eclipses. And once you've seen one, you kind of want to go and see more. So it was really good to see with my classmates, to actually sit on the roof, watch this eclipse through our eclipse glasses, but also to sit down and sort of download some of the, the ideas that are coming through from the Scorpion, the Venus themes. And you might think, well, why would you want to, you know, download that? And I think it's, you know, if you are intentionally bringing in those themes and with respect going to say, I'm going to work with this and I've got to process this, because Scorpio loves you to process. It needs to evolve. So if you're working intentionally on that, then bring it on. It's much better to intentionally address these energies and work with them and give them something to do than to ignore it and have it come and tap you on the shoulder, for sure. So as I said, the process within these two eclipses, I think, is a good one. So the solar eclipse on the 25th of October was on the south node, our past. And so it's going to look at past issues and our past programming around scorpionic things, be that money and lack programming. I mean, so many of us, I think it's a global thing, that there is a lack programming that we need to really strive for our money, and the idea that there will never be enough. It's very scorpionic. And I think on a global level, we could look at that. And address that really well within these two eclipses, because then it goes to the Taurus, where it's manifesting wealth. But anyway, sticking with the solar eclipse and the past karma, also the past experiences we have that are sexual and about relationships, as well as money. So this, because it's the past, it will bring, and it happens first, it's going to bring up those past ideas up, or what's being buried, what we probably haven't wanted to look at. So it's going to bring that first up. And if you're prepared to go, right, I'm going to look at that and actually, heal those parts of me, address that and allow it to transform my life, then it's a very powerful movement, because then it moves to this lunar eclipse. And the lunar eclipse is conjunct Uranus, crazy ass Uranus. Now, of course, the moon is also opposite the Scorpio, so it's pulling us to address the Taurus themes, 16 degrees Taurus. And that's, the Taurus themes of not what's hidden like in the Scorpio, it's the manifest world. Taurus is about fertile rutting seasons, it's sexuality, it's feeling it in your body, and it's also the comfort of food and being wealthy and manifesting richness, and really it's the money in your pocket. And so, you know, going from, you know, clearing out the south node of all those past ideas of money and lack, or sex and probably giving your power away, or not really having sacred union the way you would like it, to going to Taurus to have a much fresher and abundant feeling about things. So it's a, I think this is a nice process to allow to happen. So yes, allow those scorpionic ideas to come up, and you know, maybe write them down, it's, and get them out. What is this Scorpio moon bringing up for you? Because when you get to Taurus, we can then address them and make sure something good manifests from them. It's like the Scorpion past seed that was planted a while ago now gets to flourish with the Taurus full moon. It's like, here it comes, it's ready to flourish. We're ready for a blossoming. We're ready to bring about an abundance and you know, fertile codes for this Taurus moon, and bring it, give us the money, really. So it's we're going to get some money, hopefully, but also Uranus is there. Uranus is, as I say, it's the higher octave of Mercury, and which will be conjunct the Sun. So we're looking at, you know, the where Mercury is the lower octave, it's where we on Earth communicate with other humans between ourselves and make short journeys to meet them and the computers that connect us. Whereas Uranus is where we might connect with the gods, where we might connect with satellites and higher ideals, and where we might have flashes of inspiration. And, you know, this is information that comes from God knows where, from out and beyond, and that we need to just receive it. So it's not like the Mercury earthbound communication, it's Uranian, you know, universal communication. So with this lunar eclipse and Taurus being there, it's like, right, we're ready to receive some messages from up on high. We're ready and open to receive some really abundant and progressive information that comes through for this Taurus eclipse. So we've got to get manifesting for this. This is where we can get an information drop and get ideas about where our next steps are going to be and our future mission here. You know, what are we here for, and what are we going to do next? And also let's make sure that it is abundant and that we are align ourselves with abundance. You know, get the idea that we're not here as you know, the universe isn't sending us things to trip us up and make us feel bad. The universe is just reflecting back to us what we're thinking and feeling. And here these two eclipses are really helping us go, yep, I realized that was what I was thinking. It was bad. It was negative. It was really, I wasn't aware. And now I can do and put something in there that's much more positive and in line with the abundant flow that is Taurus, but also is connected with the Uranian higher ideals and flashes of inspiration. It's quite marvelous, really. I posted this meme that I thought was really kind of spot on for the Scorpio eclipse. And it was, whatever you're not changing, you're choosing. And I think that's really, you know, unless you say no to it, it's going to stay. If you don't change it, it's going to persist. What you don't change persists. And so if you, it is, I found that very much a scorpionic eclipse, a scorpionic theme here, that whatever you're not changing, you're choosing. And of course, Scorpio wants you to evolve and change and be the protagonist in your own story. So then that changes to the Taurus eclipse, and it says, decide what kind of life you really want, and then say no to everything that isn't that. I think that's really powerful too. And this is a big message for this eclipse. Decide what you want, put it out there. Uranus is, you know, the gods are listening. Uranus is listening. And so you get a vision board, you know, it's the idea, you get a vision board and then you forget about it, because really what you want and what you can think in our earthly bound minds, you know, the universe could have far greater plans. So, you know, you've got to let that idea go. So this is what I like. This is what it looks like. This is where I'm heading. And then allow the universe to provide you with those details. This is the Taurus manifesting eclipse that is going to allow you to do that, to actually manifest your dreams or something far, far bigger. Because, yeah, Uranus is here to swing in something totally otherworldly. So just want to repeat that. So that's the Scorpio thing, is whatever you're not changing, you're choosing. And then the Taurus idea is decide what kind of life you really want and then say no to everything that isn't it. And of course, what you say no to is far, far more important than what you say yes to. And I'm going to explain this a little bit more when we get to the Mars retrograde piece of this, which we're coming into, because it's a powerful no season. So whilst we get to do this, these eye themes, we might notice what themes are coming up for us in the Scorpio eclipse. You know, you might go, oh God, here it comes. And so here are the themes I've got to address. And particularly that tiny little thing you really didn't want to look at, but there it is. It's painful and you do have to look at it. But review, reconsider, but do not ignore. Process it, evolve it, put it out there, get help. You know, get help, you know, that we all need some help. And then going for the lunar eclipsing to get some tangible results, embody it. And of course, Taurus is the cash, rich, wealth. It's the fertilizing codes that we want to bring in. But of course, there is a caveat to this process, that the asteroid Niobe is in aspect. She is also at 16 degrees Taurus on this eclipse. And, you know, I like to look at the asteroids because they have such powerful stories that we can totally understand. And Niobe was very boastful that she had 7 daughters and 7 sons, so 14 children. And she was boasting too much. And the gods stroke down all her children. They all got killed. And so she was obviously hugely remorseful about her boastfulness, but also the fact that she lost these children. And Niobe now sits on a rock weeping for her lost children. It's so sad. And so Niobe is here. And I kind of feel like that, you know, when you relate to an asteroid story and it is, you know, very specifically in your chart, you can understand some of those stories, and perhaps they've been something that you need to address in this life. But I think we all need to be aware that this Taurus, you know, Taurus is our bodies. Uranus is like, what are we doing to our bodies? And Niobe is here saying, what are we doing to the children? Because here we've all been given, or almost mandated, in some places we have been mandated to take a medication. Now they want to put it on America's medication list for children. And the children have to take a medication, then the company isn't liable for anything that goes wrong. And that's why they want to give it to the children. So America is going to be, this medication that we've all been taking recently is going to go on America's medication schedule for kids. Yet we're looking at that there is actually no evidence that this prevents transmission. And also, it's very clear that the children aren't affected by anything that went on in the pandemic. They are not going to be harmed as much as the adults and the older people are. So why are we giving it to the children? And I think Niobe here is to show in some ways that we can't just abuse that sort of trust in our children any longer. And I think there's something may come around about that, you know, on one hand, in Europe, especially, that, you know, we've had the European members of parliament saying, you know, we want to see what that contract is that brought about these medications for everyone. And the fact that there is no evidence to say that it stops transmission. And yet in America, we're seeing that they want to give this medication to the children on their scheduled medication list for kids. So it's wrong in some way. And I think this Niobe, that's what the sort of thing that Niobe is going to bring up. However, also, I would say, if you are trying for children, I think this eclipse is a good time. If you 14 kids is a lot. It's very, and in Taurus, it's hugely fertile. So yeah, get rutting, people. this is the time if you want that. But also, I'd say, even if you don't want children, Uranus there could throw in a curveball. So, either way, it's exceedingly fertile this period now. So unfortunately, in the UK, we are not going to be able to see this lunar eclipse on the 8th of November. It's happening at 11 o'clock in the morning, and of course the moon won't be around. But in America, if you're if you're in LA, that's going to be at 8 o'clock. It's not going to be 8 hours behind, so that's 3 o'clock in the morning in LA. So I think you've got much better chance of seeing it there if you want to wake up or stay up and party until three. But in New York, you're not going to see it unless it's really dark. You might see it at dawn. So we're going to see the thing about the solar eclipse is that you have to be in a very specific space to see the solar eclipse. And you'll see that if you Google what the Saros cycles look like, you see the little serpent S's, they're like drawn out S's where the shadow of the moon goes across the earth and it makes a pattern. And you know, we are in number 1, 2, 4 of a Saros cycle. So it's, it makes a really good image to see how that looks on Earth when you Google that and see the pattern that it creates. The Saros cycle that we're in, we were in last week's solar eclipse, was in a Saros cycle number 1, 2, 4. And there's about 42 Saros cycles going on at any given time, and they last for centuries. Now, this one of last week, started on the 6th of March, 1049, and in the South Polar region. And then they either move from the South Pole to the North Pole or the North Pole to the South. So this one, obviously we just had on the 25th of October, it ends, the Saros cycle for this one ends on the 11th of May, 2347 in the North Pole. So that's in 300 years time. So that's 1300 years that we have this particular Saros cycle that we're in now. So we're not going to be able to see that. We can't see it in the UK, but in LA, you're definitely going to be able to see it if you want to get up in the middle of the night. So what you are going to see is the blood moon. The moon goes red in the middle of the night. It's quite fascinating to see. And it starts off quite getting darker and you think, is it getting black? Is it black? And then this kind of flash of red goes across. And then slowly as the light comes in the other side, you suddenly see it goes lighter and lighter and lighter. But yes, it's actually a red moon. And this redness is, you know, we don't have any interference from the sun at this point. So the redness was what we see is in a 3D sense and a scientific sense, we are seeing the electromagnetic aura of the Earth being reflected onto the moon. So we're looking, so the moon, if you think of it, is our past and our memories and our psyche, the shadow. And so what we're seeing is the Earth being reflected onto the moon. So we're looking at our shadow. We're literally looking at our shadow. And also the idea here that we don't have the solar forces, you know, the benevolent solar forces, you know, providing us with support here. And it's with earthly and with consciousness and vitality. This is just between us and the moon. So it's a deeply esoteric, the shadow forces are at work here. We really are looking at some sort of inner wisdom when we see this lunar eclipse. So, you know, get up and have a look. But it's going to obviously affect all of us, and especially if we have planets around Taurus or around these, this is 16 degree mark. But anyway, this redness that we see, it is the Earth's particles that we're kind of being reflected onto the moon, but it's also the colour of Mars. Now, if you read it up in Steiner says that the old moon was combined with Venus and Mars. And so we're seeing the Mars idea onto moon because the moon and Mars have a deep connection. And if we think Lucifer, when Mars and Venus were with the moon, Lucifer, the devil Lucifer, comes from Venus and the devil Ahriman comes from Mars. And the Luciferic idea is the duality construct, the soul idea that we have a soul and that we're absolutely in fear of losing our soul, that, you know, it might be taken away by a devil, you know, that we're going to be in hell and damnation if we do the wrong thing. It's total duality. That's the Luciferic idea of the devil. But the Ahrimanic, which comes from Mars, is the idea that there we don't have a soul and that we are literally just science and biology standing here. And then when we die, the biology ends and just goes to dust. And that's Ahriman, so that we feel like we're soulless and that science is the only answer to progress. And we're literally going for a very Ahrimanic period right now where we're addressing those issues of being just scientific and not having any kind of magical soul being or soul progression or spirit that is connected to us. So those are the two Ahrimanics. So when we see this on the moon, it's like, you know, the question of you know, do I have a soul? Am I here? You know, this Mars force is really kind of quite powerful in this moon. So we need to have some wolves howling at the moon as well at this point as well. I thought it was interesting though that you know, Ahriman was is supposed to be born every 666 years. We get an incarnation of Ahriman on Earth, or he tries to incarnate and tries to move something very powerful. And of course, the year 666, this was the beginning of the Dark Ages. But within the Dark Ages, you know, there was the Ahrimanic incarnation at Gondishapur. And Gondishapur is in Kazakhstan now, and that is in Iran. Southern Iran. And the Gondishapur was like this culture where they were given really advanced technology and advanced medical ideas. And there was a flourishing of cultural, medical, scientific kind of universities and hospital. Really, it was a flourishing that happened. But it was like if you give nuclear power to a culture that's too primitive, it's going to blow itself up. And that was what was happening at Gondishapur in this at this time around 666. So that was the Ahrimanic forces at play at this point, but actually it did destroy itself, or it was destroyed so that it wasn't allowed to progress. You know, the light defeated the dark. And so that was at 666. But if you add on another 666 years to that, we get to 1998. And if you think, well, okay, who was born in 1998? So you know, they would be 24 years old now. And I thought it'd be quite interesting to have a look at who was born in 1998. It's quite actually difficult to Google celebrities and, you know, famous people born in 1998, because they haven't really made their name yet at 24. So there's a few actresses and things, but there was this what I found was interesting. There was a rapper called X-Tentacion. I can't say his name, but it's Triple X Tentacion, Triple X. And he's got tattoos all over his face and, quote unquote, known for really depressing and even devastating music. I was like, whoa, that could be him. But then I found out he's dead. So there could be very unfortunate for him. But potentially that's something that could have been a short incarnation. There's also the rapper Lil Skies. He was born in 1998. He's covered in facial tattoos and he looks like a total badass. So there's one nominee. Apologies to him if he's not feeling that, or might want to actually, yeah, bring it on. Anyway, there's also other celebrities born in 1998 with Shawn Mendes, Elle Fanning, Jaden Smith, who is the son of Will Smith, and also Paris Jackson. And I'm not feeling any of them to be particularly Ahrimanic or, you know, dark in their forces. But anyway, that was my little Google for myself. But also, going back to the actual eclipse that is happening at 16 degrees in Taurus, it also makes a T-square. So the full moon, the lunar eclipse is a full moon. So the moon is in Taurus, the sun is opposite in Scorpio, but at right angles to both of those is Saturn. Saturn is at 18 degrees Aquarius, and this makes up a T-square. And sometimes we might want to look at what's happening at the opposite side of that T-square. So if you've got something in Leo around sort of 14 to 18 degrees Leo, 19 degrees maybe, 20, you might think in that this is something that you're having a fixed situation that might combust or might bring about something quite powerful for you. But anyway, this T square in Saturn. Now, Saturn has been in Aquarius. Saturn wants to restrict. And Saturn is your dad that goes, you're not going out in that miniskirt. You're going to go back into your room. You're going to tidy your room and do your homework. And you're not going out. And you're like, no, dad, I want to go. Everyone's going. And, that idea, which I had, because my dad was a policeman, so definitely Saturnian father. But when you go back to your room and it's nice and cozy and you get into rhythm, you tidy it up and you do your homework, and next day you get top marks and you go, yes, because Saturn is the master builder. He helps you create, but you've got to do it properly, even though you might be squirming when he makes you do it. But Saturn is not naturally gifted in Aquarius. You know, it's like the mad professor energy, but Saturn is oppressive and Aquarius is the people. And of course, we have been oppressed and suppressed and in lockdown for the last 2 years that Saturn has been in Aquarius. And actually moving into Aquarius, especially in the UK, when he moved out of Capricorn and into Aquarius, he went into lockdown. And when Saturn moved back into Capricorn, we came out of lockdown. And when he went back into Aquarius, we went back into lockdown. So it was like, gosh, you can't make this stuff up. It really is literally Saturn is oppressing the people. But here he's making this a T-square. Now, Saturn, as I say, makes you do the right thing. We've all been stuck in our rooms, stuck in our houses. But now with Saturn here, he wants a proper investigation. This is because Saturn here is a square to the south node in Scorpio, where we've been hidden, where there's been sort of protocols and ideas and concepts that we've been made to follow. There's been control. Scorpio loves control. And the Saturn here wants an investigation into why that happened, how it happened, etc. Because this was the south node, what's already happened. But then Saturn is also square to the north node and Taurus about where we're heading. And Taurus is going to be our bodies, and he's going to go, look at the evidence in our bodies. Look what's happening to us. What are we feeling? And the people are going to go, this is us. And of course, Uranus is there. So we're going to waking up to really what has happened to us in this 2 years period. And Saturn is really going to force a proper investigation, going to make us, you know, it's like the Uranus idea. It's going to wake up and smell the coffee. Wake up and smell the coffee, because Saturn is here and he's forcing an idea of responsibility. It's not just lockdown, it's responsibility that's going to bring about a proper building of relationship. And of course, Saturn is soon going to be going into Pisces, but so this is the last, you know, the next 6 months. Saturn has been in Aquarius, but it spends 2.5 years, nearly 3 years in each sign, but has been 2 years in the first two decans of Aquarius, which takes up to 20 degrees. And for the last 6 months, it's going to zoom through that last 10 degrees really quickly. And in March, it's going to enter Pisces. So for now, we have Saturn here going, right, this is forcing to look at the past and what was hidden, to bring about what is actually happening and real in the Taurus sense. So this is the T-square that's really adding so much pressure to this lunar eclipse. So it is super powerful on so many levels. So there is a lot to process here. And what I found was absolutely fascinating, that was a couple of days after, so the eclipse happens on the 8th, and just on the 10th, the moon catches up with Mars in Gemini, and Mars will have just gone retrograde. So Mars will still be at 25 degrees at the retrograde spot, 25 degrees Gemini. So the moon is going to enhance what's going on for Mars in Gemini. We're going to really feel it and see it, and it's going to be highlighted. And of course, the moon is fresh from this eclipse. A freshly eclipsed moon going straight to conjunct Mars is super powerful. And I've already said that the lunar eclipse, we're seeing Mars energies there as well. So we're going to get up to the moon joining Mars. But not only that, the moon and Mars together create a yod formation. They're at the head of a yod formation. And whilst the moon moves on straight past Mars, the Mars holds this yod formation for 7 days. And a yod formation is two inconjuncts pointing at the same point. And where we have an inconjunct, we're ignoring it. So this yod is like the finger of God coming out of the sky going, you, yes, you. And you're like, what? I wasn't, you know, totally not aware. And I wasn't thinking, I didn't see it. It's the total blind spot of the inconjunct coming together to go, whoa, wake up, here we go. Didn't realize that. And it's where you're working in the dark and suddenly the lights go on and just go, wow. So we've got 7 days of Mars. So Mars is going to be retrograding at this point, the first, you know, turnaround. So it's practically still, but is retrograding. It's already having the eclipse moon highlight it. But on one side, the inconjunct goes to the Sun, which has obviously just been through two eclipses, the Sun, Mercury and Venus in Scorpio, the dark and what is hidden and the subconscious. And on the other side, it's going to be in conjunct to Pluto in Capricorn, which is the patriarchy, the business world, the politics and all the plutonic, toxic kind of bad, poisonous stuff that's been going on there. And so they're pointing at Mars. Mars retrograde. So Mars is like going forward in Gemini as a trickster. He's going to tell you lies. He's going to keep going no matter what, just tricking you and doesn't matter. But retrograde, it's like, oh, I've got to think about this. I'm going inwards. My thoughts are going inwards. And now at this yod, it's like all this whole concept of anything I've been told, anything that's been hidden from me, Mars retrograde here has the ability to dig it out and show you. You know, so there's 7 days of the initial of this Mars retrograde where it's at the head of this yod. 7 days. And 7 days is always a good healing process, because when you've been sick, it's really good idea to leave 7 days for your body to process your back to wellness. And of course, we never take 7 days off work or sickness, but you go through the planetary days. So you go through Monday, you have the lunar ideas, the moon, Tuesday, Mars, Wednesday, Mercury, Thursday, Jupiter, Friday, Vendredi is Venus day, Saturday is Saturn, and Sunday is the moon. Oh no, Sunday is the Sun, of course. So we go through this whole process that each day we can get some energy from that planet to help us process why we've gone through that disease. And so it's always, you know, you're never fully well. If you've been ill, you've got to give it a week to go, right, I'm really well now. I've processed all of that. So in the same way here, we have 7 days to really process what Mars retrograde is going to tell us. And it will be telling us something, because, you know, as I say, Mars will be talking to us forward, but when it comes backwards, we're going to have to reconsider and go inward. And it's a part of the idea of where when it Mars is forward and outward, we're listening and understanding what we hear on the outside. But when it goes inward and backwards, we're going, what do I think? What am I thinking? And that's when we have to use our own discernment about the information that's out there. It's a powerful tool here for us to go through right at the beginning of Mars retrograde. Mars is going to retrograde until January the 8th, 2023. So this is a big kickoff for this whole process. And it's no joke that we are probably going to be starting quite a few investigations into what has been happening in the last couple of years. So here's Mars retrograde to do this. Here's Mars at the head of a yod. So it's going to force us to be thinking for ourselves, you know, on our own, like, what am I going to think of that? And not take the news from obvious sources. And it's forcing us also, you know, to have our own discernment in that, but forcing a no. And I said this, it's more important who we say no to, what we say no to, than what we say yes to. It's just like that meme that says, you know, what you're not changing, you're accepting and running with. It's like the saying yes to. So this Mars retrograde here is an opportunity to not suddenly realize that we're thinking along one line of or one process, one program of thought and go, actually, no, I can change that and think about something else or think of these things in a different way. And, you know, there's every opportunity to be surprised by that. But also because we're, you know, planets going retrograde take us inwards, there is the opportunity to look at the truths ourselves, our own truths. And the idea that, you know, we obviously tell ourselves lies occasionally, and Mars going retrograde here is a time to be brutally honest with ourselves and kind of wake ourselves up to some to new ideas, new thought process. It's a really good time to start writing all the stuff in your head. And I'm a big fan, I've said before, of the morning pages. When you wake up, first thing you do is write 3 full scrap pages of all your thoughts, get them out there, and you'll be amazing. First of all, it's just, you realize that it's just rubbish. But then after a while, either a pattern emerges or a few diamonds of information that really come out. It's quite a powerful process to, and actually to get all the rubbish out of your head first thing, it clears it too. So anyway, Mars retrograde is a great opportunity to do that. So it's going to give us, Mars here is going to give us an honest review in the first 7 days of its retrograde. Well, no, it's not the first 7 days of the retrograde. It's this particular 7 days from the 10th, an honest review of the current situation. We're going to find out some lies. We're going to find out facts that weren't obvious before. We're going to find out hidden ideas and things. And we're going to have to make our own mind up because we've been going in the dark. And Mars retrograde in Gemini is going to show us the shadow big time. So Mars isn't going to be going forward until January, 8th of January, 2023. So I do go and listen to my Mars retrograde episode to give more information on that. I think it's a very powerful process. And, you know, we fear the retrograde process, but actually this is a really ideal time to get rid of stuff, get rid of any mental programming that doesn't suit you, and go inward. And maybe read a book instead of going out. It's like the inward process. So I hope that helps. And I would love to hear your ideas and thoughts about any of the subjects that I've covered. So please contact me or email me. I'd love to hear from you. I hope you found that not only helpful, but enjoyable. And hopefully I'll catch you on the next episode too. Thank you very much and goodbye.